been a song that impacted your life greatly. Welcome to the Parable Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Zapchenk, and joining me today is my friend, Jesse Royer, who shares about his journey after diagnosis.
One of the only things that you can control is how you react. So for me, whether I'm in pain or I'm not feeling good or, you know, whether I have a bad day, whatever it is, I choose to act with kindness and I choose to try to make other people feel that.
Here's my conversation with Jesse Royer. So excited for you to meet one of my new friends, Jesse Royer. Jesse, we met at Westridge, which is our home church. We're in the Chicagoland area. And I just have to say, like, you are just like one of the kindest people. I don't know if you get that a lot, but you just like are so kind. Like, and you're on our welcome team at our church. So this is like the perfect spot for you. So would you say that people say that about you often?
I really appreciate you saying that. I feel like I've maybe heard it a few times, but you know, I try to be, but yeah, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I think you have like just a spirit about you where you're just like, oh, well, like, yeah, I'm super glad to be here. Like, thank you for talking to me. So you are about to be a first time dad. And yes. So I'd love to know, what is it that you're most excited about? And what is there something that you're like, I'm kind of scared about this?
I think I'm most excited about just to like see what she looks like and just like how she is, you know, like I'm super excited for that. I'm nervous pretty much all the way around. Obviously never been a dad, know nothing about being a dad. I've been like reading my book, How to Be a Dad, like stuff like that. Yeah, I'm just nervous to not, you know, do anything wrong, which I've heard I'm going to do a lot. But yeah, I'm just really excited.
That happens. Like, we're going to do things wrong. But I think that is like the good thing of knowing, like, nobody like came into this world being like, oh, I know exactly how to be a perfect parent. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Besides having a baby on the way, what do you do day to day, Jesse? What are you passionate about?
Sure. Yeah. So I have my wife, of course, very passionate about her. As far as work goes, I work at a apartment community, I guess. Mm-hmm. They have like 400 units. I mean, I was doing like maintenance and stuff, and I was more like outside doing physical stuff. But recently, I actually just got moved into the office, which I'm super happy about. So yeah, I mainly just like do like a lot of the book work and stuff like that. I help people fill out like applications and stuff like that. So, but previously to that, me and then two other guys had a apartment community of like 50 units. And I actually did that for 10 years. And then we ended up selling that. And so this next one was my friend's community, basically. So I just kind of jumped in on that and I've been helping with that. So.
How did you meet your wife?
So yeah, we actually met on Hinge, and it's actually really funny because I had seen her on there and I was like, oh my gosh, whoa. And like, I accidentally went the wrong way with my swipe. And I literally was like, no. And like, I was just like, oh my God, what did I just do? And I found out that if you paid, you could swipe back. Okay. And I paid money to go back.
Yeah.
And it's just been great ever since.
So, oh my gosh. Okay. So she saw the swipe and that's how she like connected with you. Is that what?
Yeah. And then you can kind of start a conversation and stuff like that. And we ended up like FaceTiming after the first couple of days. And like, we were having like 7 hour FaceTimes, like just insane conversation.
All because of Hinge and the wrong swipe. That's amazing.
Exactly.
Well, Jesse, I'd love to know, like, it's fall in the Chicagoland area. What is like something that you look forward to every fall?
Actually, I would say this fall in particular, I know you said every fall, but I think fall is actually my favorite season, just with everything changing, you know, like it gets a little bit colder. There's just really nothing like it. Mm-hmm. And I think the most exciting thing is having this baby come and to like show her, you get to re-experience like everything again. Mm-hmm. And like thinking that I would maybe never have the opportunity to have kids. Mm-hmm. It makes it like that much sweeter. So I'm really excited just to show her the world.
That's super sweet, Jesse. One of my favorite questions is, when did Jesus become more than just a name for you?
I would say probably when I got sick was when Jesus became more of a name. And it wasn't necessarily right at the beginning, but it was almost more towards the end of me being sick when I really realized who he truly was.
And if I remember correctly, you had said to me before that, like, Jesus, like, that wasn't, like, even in your vocabulary, you weren't even sure if you even believe, like, God existed. Is that right?
Yeah, that's totally true. Like, I when I ended up getting sick, my mom kind of had a, because I was raised, you know, believing in Jesus and stuff like that. I went to church when I was young, you know, all that stuff. But I think just as I got older and, you know, after I got sick, my mom had kind of asked me, like, you know, do you believe in God? Mm-hmm. And I was polite about it, but I remember kind of laughing to myself and being like, no, I don't at all. Yeah. I'm just like a super see it to believe it kind of person.
Sure.
And I guess maybe God knew that. And, you know, after that, I just went on a wild journey of seeing it to believe it.
Yeah. That's interesting. I think there's so many of us that like need to see to believe it. And I think there's like that part, like after Jesus was crucified, he came back and Thomas, like he needed to put his hands like in the holes on Jesus's hands. And I think
that is me.
Yeah. It depends on like the season, how I'm feeling from day to day. But there's so many of us that are just like, I just need like the physicalness of something to know, like, is this tangible? Is this true? Why do you think that you need to see it like so much like in your life?
You know, I don't know. I think just with everything, I'm just such a like, I need proof kind of person. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the way I'm wired. It's always like somebody says something, this or that. It's like, okay, well, you have to show me. I have to see it. It's hard for me to just believe something with no previous knowledge of proof or you know, anything like that. It makes it hard for me personally to believe. And I think, yeah, like you said, like a lot of people are that way. And it's unfortunate because some people do get a chance to see, but some people may not. And I think Jesus even said something about that, you know, like, blessed are the people who haven't seen and yet still believe.
Yeah.
And until then, I was having a really hard time believing.
I have one more fun question, I guess, before we get into your parable story.
Yeah.
I know that you were a dancer. And so I'd love to know, like, what was one of your, like, best, like, dance experiences? And I mean, this could go before you were professionally dancing. Like, what, back in your seventh grade dance? I don't know.
So I actually started dancing when I was, like, I think eight. And I'd done it ever since. And I'd say probably my favorite thing that I have is I was taking classes in LA because I moved there for a while. And I was taking classes from Michael Jackson's choreographer, which was awesome. Like, I'm a huge fan and stuff. So that was really, really cool. I would say that. And then I had a few friends that booked out there before me. And they started doing, like, music videos for, like, Justin Bieber and stuff. And, like, I thought that was just so cool. So, yeah, I would say learning from him was, like, insane.
Wow.
For sure.
It's just like fun to kind of look back and see like the different seasons and the places that, you know, we've been and you're like, wait, like how did this even happen? And that's big or small ways. And so I think that's why stories matter to me. That's how I get to connect with other people, hear and understand their life. So Jesse, I'd love for you to kind of just dive in and share one of your parable stories with us.
Yeah. So I feel like it's going to be like an interesting layout of how I did it.
Okay.
But if I were to go back to, and maybe even pick up with the dance thing, like I, you know, was set to believe that I was going to be a dancer. Like, I think everybody knew it. I was planning to move to LA, all these things. And while I was actually doing a dance routine, I had been running into a different dressing room. And when I turned the corner, I slipped over a pair of shoes that were in the doorway that you couldn't see. And I tripped and I hit my head into a brick wall. And from that moment, my entire life completely changed, you know, and yeah, it just kind of led me down a path of just complete and utter depression, anxiety, and seeking the truth and proof that God exists or doesn't exist.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about, you know, that moment when you hit your head. And obviously you didn't necessarily know like if anything was necessarily wrong, but there was something that came out of that moment for you. Can you explain like what happened?
You know, I hit my head and maybe a week later or so, I woke up and everything was different. My vision was different. My muscles were like cramping over my entire body and my face and my legs everywhere. And I could tell that something was just really wrong. You know, I was off balance. I was having a hard time dancing and we were at like a competition and I could just tell that something was seriously not right. And I didn't know if it was going to be something that stayed or if it was something that, you know, would get better. And so, you know, we ended up going to a doctor. And trying to figure out, you know, what the issue was, what it was. They were thinking maybe just a brain injury. And I remember the doctor was just a general doctor. And he was like, you know, maybe you should have a MRI just to check to see if there's any brain damage or anything like that. And so we're like, okay, you know, I guess. And after we had that MRI, we ended up finding a spot on my brain that was unrelated to the head injury. So now on top of the head injury symptoms, now everybody's completely disregarding that and focused on the spot on my brain. Mm-hmm. And so basically they had said, you know, okay, so we don't know what it is. We're going to do MRIs every 3 months. And then if there's no change, it'll be 6 months. And then, you know, 8 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, mm-hmm. and this and that. And, you know, we'll just kind of watch it. And so, you know, during that, I ended up doing a few MRIs, quite a few. During that time, I even moved to LA for a little bit because I just, dance was like everything to me. And mm-hmm. I did not want to give that up because of this. So yeah, I probably had maybe 15 to 20 MRIs or so. Mm. And, you know, they had been spanned out and there was no change. And I was getting kind of sick of it. And I just wanted to move on with my life. Mm-hmm. So there was this one MRI where I was just like at the end of it. I'm just like, oh, man, like, I'm just so done with these MRIs. Like, they're not enjoyable. Your head's like strapped into the thing and you're going in this tunnel and it's just so not pleasant at all. And so I'm sitting there and they're running late at my MRI appointment. And I was saying to my mom, because she went with me on every single one. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm done with this. Like, it's clearly just a spot. It's not going to grow. It's nothing. They're not even sure if it was something in the first place. I said, let's get up. Let's leave. Like, I think this is it for me. And we actually stood up and started walking towards the door. And then they called my name. And I was like, ah, she's like, okay, they got you. We should probably do it. And I'm like, okay. So we go in. And I didn't know it at the time, but it turns out that it grew. And I didn't find that out until a few weeks later when my mom and dad kind of sat me down. And they knew it was a tumor, but we didn't know what kind because we hadn't done a biopsy yet. And that's pretty much when my whole life was derailed.
Yeah, well, I mean, you said that you went through like some depression and anxiety, and that's like to be expected. I mean, how would you not? You had mentioned to me prior to this conversation, like you didn't want to know like how long you had once you found out that this was a tumor. And also, you don't want to know the name of the cancer, which my curiosity, like it would eat me alive. And then I would just like, I would then get a little probably nutty and then Google everything and try to self-diagnose everything I could. But were you preventing yourself from that? Like, why choose that? Like, I think that is a super brave choice for you.
Yeah. So like we did the biopsy and like I had known some studies that like the power of the brain basically. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm somebody who has anxiety and I would totally obsess and try to look it up and all this stuff, just like you. Mm-hmm. I figured like, you know, I remember after we had the biopsy and we were getting ready to go in there, we like ate lunch in this hospital in Chicago and I'm sitting there thinking my life is over. I remember walking down the hall, actually, and there was rooms side to side of all these people that had problems, whether there were tumors or cancer, or whatever it was. And they're on each side. And I was walking down this hall, like newly hearing this news and seeing all these sick people. And I'm like, wow, you know, this is going to be me. And it already is. And I'm just thinking, wow, my life is over. Mm-hmm. And my parents were talking about chemo and stuff like that. And I remember my dad's like a rough around the edges kind of guy. And he's saying like, oh, you know, you got to do chemo. And it just felt like deep down, something was speaking to me saying, and don't get me wrong, I think chemo helps so many people.
Absolutely.
But it was just saying like, it just didn't feel like chemo was for me. Mm-hmm. And I remember trying to tell my dad that, and he kind of jumped on me and he's like, no, this is the only thing you have. This is what you need, blah, 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 blah. And, but yeah, I would say hearing that and just sitting with my parents in a hospital cafeteria, just learning that you have a brain tumor was really hard. And so I figured, I almost feel like it's better to not know what it is, because with the brain and the mind being so strong, I didn't want hearing the name or hearing my life expectancy to have my brain influence my body into dying any quicker or anything like that. Because I've seen these studies of, you know, people that have multiple personalities and one is diabetic and one is not. Mm-hmm. And it's insane to me, like that your mind is that powerful that, you know, one personality could need medicine for that and the other one doesn't need it. Yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, with how strong the mind is, I'm just going to push this to the side, let my parents get all the info, and I'm just going to live my life to the best of my ability.
for somebody like listening along, they're like, well, he's here. Yeah. Like, what happened? What happened after?
It's a long story, but mm-hmm. basically after that happens, they basically said you need 2 brain surgeries, you need chemo, and it wasn't the IV form, it was the pills, which I guess is stronger because it goes up to your brain. Mm. So I needed that, and then I needed the maximum radiation that you could have to your brain. Mm. And, you know, I remember, you know, thinking, oh, this isn't right, blah, blah, blah. But I knew I had to do it. I remember the first biopsy that I had a full-blown panic attack right before mm-hmm. surgery. And everyone rushed in, all these doctors, they were like ripping my shirt off. They're putting all these electrodes on me mm-hmm. and trying to give me an EKG because they thought I was having a heart attack. But I wasn't, I was just nervous. Mm-hmm. And so I like put my headphones in, like sitting there while everybody's like rushing around me, and I was just listening to music. Mm-hmm. And trying to pretend that it wasn't happening. And you could see my dad just sitting there staring at me, you know, just like not knowing what to do. And I remember the doctor said, you know, he's just having an anxiety attack. Just roll him back there. Let's get started. And so they put me under, and thank God, because my heart was just boom, 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 like crazy. Even now, you know, I get nervous, of course. You can probably hear it in my voice. But like, yeah, just knowing you're about to have brain surgery, it was like, oh my God, because they make you sign a form that you might not come back out the same as you did. And when they did the brain tumor, I knew that it was where my speech is. That's all I knew. Mm-hmm. And so I never had any issues with my speech, never had any symptoms to this day of the tumor, mm-hmm. which I'm very grateful for. We ended up going to Mayo Clinic and talking to some more doctors there, getting a second opinion. They had told the life expectancy to my parents, which I also didn't want to know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we ended up doing the chemo. I did the radiation, and it was by far the hardest thing I have ever had to do.
Yeah.
And I remember going into my radiation treatments and stuff. They have this big metal door and they strap you down to, you know, this table, and there's like all these pins in there with like this mask on you so you can't move, because you can't move because if you move it could damage the radiation a different part of your brain.
Sure.
And so I remember they could let you play music, so I would like march in every morning to the song Radioactive. So I'd be laying on this table that like they lift you up and spin you around, and you can hear the song like Radioactive. So I thought that was kind of like cool.
Oh my gosh. Well,
I was just trying to always make light of it, you know.
Sure. What would you say? Because you said that in the beginning you were seeking the truth and like proving like if Jesus was like the real thing. Like, so in this moment, as you are on the radiation table, mm-hmm. what were you thinking of Jesus at that moment? Like, he forgot you?
Yeah, I think even then, I don't even think Jesus was on my radar yet.
Okay.
I had wondered initially, like, oh man, if I die, where am I going to go? Like, mm-hmm. am I gone? Am I dead? I remember thinking that, but, you know, I had the chemo and I had the radiation, which was really hard, you know, some of my hair, you know, obviously came off and stuff. And mm-hmm. with the 2 surgeries, you know, I had probably almost 100 staples in my head holding my skin together because they cut around and stuff. And the doctor even said like, oh, we got all your tumor. We got everything like right after the surgery. Mm-hmm. And then later on, he's like, oh yeah, no, actually we didn't get all of it. And so that really upset my parents, because he was just kind of trying to like play the hero. And like during that, my dad's wallet got stolen by one of the nurses, like with all his money in it and his ID. And then they pretended they never took it, but there was no cameras. Like everything bad that could have happened was like happening. And it was lucky that I didn't have cancer, but they treat brain tumors the exact same way, even if they're not cancerous. Mm-hmm. With the chemo, it was really hard because I know how bad my dad wanted me to take it, even though I didn't.
Yeah.
And like every night I would go to sleep wondering if I would wake up the next morning. Mm-hmm. Wow. And I think when I was hitting that point of that was when I was like, I need to know if there is a God or not, because I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And that's when I became obsessed with, I started looking at the Shroud of Turin. I started reading The Case of Christ by Lee Strobel. I started Heaven is for Real, watching movies. I started listening to music. I started trying to basically be the person to prove if God is real or not, because I feel like maybe God pushed me into a place where I had to make a decision almost.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't want to say pushed, but I just felt compelled to know what would happen and to find out if God is real, because I so badly wanted to believe it. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of struggling with that as well. But yeah, I would say when things got really bad is when I started connecting with like music and other things like that, that really made me dive into learning about God and reading the Bible a little bit.
That's interesting that like you were just trying to find the truth, but you know, having the ability of just being like, I'm going to look at everything. And so tell me a little bit more about the music side of it. I totally understand like Case for Christ, Lee Strobel's stuff. Where you're like, but I'm also going to go to music. So what was it about that?
Yeah. So being like a dancer previously, like I connect so much with music. And I feel like I'm like, I don't know how to say this in the right way, but I feel like I'm kind of like a more in tune with being like my emotions, I guess, more in tune with my emotions. Yeah. And so like certain songs, like I really feel the lyrics, like I really dive deep into the lyrics and I think about how it makes me feel. And I think that the music was just something I connected with the most because that was something that I think God knew that I connected with the most from dancing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so hearing some of those songs, I think, were some of the foundation that started to bring me to faith or even learn about God a little bit. And yeah, I think that was just one of the big puzzle pieces that really brought me in and kind of got my attention.
I think that's the beautiful thing of God. And for me, like, I believe God is a relationship that we have with each other. And because we are his kids, we're his children, he knows everything about us. And so even in the midst of such trauma and depression and anxiety and sickness, God's like, I'm going to use music to connect with my child. And so that's how he spoke into that like truth and that proof that you needed to hear. So what specifically, like besides obviously having, I think that's super important to be reflective and feel the emotions of a song. Sure. But like, was there a specific song? Was there specific lyrics that like stood out? You're like, and you could say, okay, this was the moment that it like kind of shifted for me.
Yeah, I would say there is one time for sure, like, it was actually after I had gotten a little bit better, but I was still kind of sick. And I remember, you know, a lot of times through this whole thing, I feel like I was pleading to God, praying, asking for help, and at the same time getting mad that I wasn't getting it or being depressed, or I was just all over the place, like literally on the bathroom floor, on my knees, crying, yelling, asking, please help me, testing him at every turn. Like, if you flicker the lights just once, like, I'll know you're real. I would do that like repetitively, nonstop. Like, I would do anything I possibly could to get a sign from God because I was just so afraid of dying. And, you know, it's a weird way to think that that's how I was brought to my faith, to, you know, dive into Jesus like that. But, you know, once I was getting better, you know, after some of this, and to kind of answer your question, once I got a little bit better, there was this song. It's called Whole Heart, and it is a Hillsong song. Yeah, so like I was blaring the song and I had it on my phone, you know, and I'm alone in the house and I was crying and I was so upset. And, you know, I brought it into the bathroom and I'd hit pause. You know, I went back to the couch, and so it was in the other room, my phone. And so I had come back and sat down and I just broke down and I was just crying and talking to God. And the weirdest thing happened, and I still think I'm crazy, but all of a sudden, like, I'm sitting on the floor, I'm crying, and all of a sudden I hear music playing, and it wasn't before. Mm-hmm. And it was almost as if somebody pressed play. Mm-hmm. And I heard that, and I got up and I walked into the bathroom, and it was towards the end of the song. And the lyrics where it started was, once I was broken, but you loved my whole heart through. Sin has no hold on me because your grace holds me now. Healed and forgiven, look where my chains are now. Death has no hold on me because your grace holds that ground. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing those lyrics, and it was like, it felt like God was talking to me. You know, it's like healed and forgiven. There was so many things that I was upset about with getting sick, and that was just something that I feel like I almost got an answer from God.
Yeah.
You know, it's like my phone was on pause and then it plays and then that plays. And it's like, of all things, mm-hmm. like it felt like maybe he heard me, and it just really, really spoke to me.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Jesse, because I think there's been moments in my life too, where like, if you just do this, like, I promise, like, you know, we want that tangible moment, and, you know, it's possible. We don't know fully until we get to the other side. Is God using, you know, this for a certain reason or that? And I totally believe whether or not like the Bluetooth turned on or he did it, like that meant something. Like there was a reason and it shifted and altered your relationship with him going forward. So it's huge.
Definitely.
I'd be curious. You said that you're afraid of dying. Now, like knowing what you know now as being a Christian, knowing like that sure. we're going to get to be with him forever in eternity, are you still afraid of dying?
So before I was like terrified.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm still nervous about it.
Yeah.
But the thing is like, and it kind of leads me into like this whole thing, like, I feel like before I didn't really know too much about God.
Yeah.
I didn't really think about God. And the way that, you know, I had this head injury and then just so happened to find a brain tumor and no issues from the brain tumor other than all the surgeries and stuff. But it's like, I almost feel like God in like a weird roundabout way had or maybe used the head injury to bring me closer to him, because it's like, I could die tomorrow. I could die in 10 years. I could die in 30 years. I could die in 3 to 5 years. I could die walking up the stairs after this interview. But the difference now is before I didn't know God and I didn't have that. And I almost wonder if God put me through this because the next time death comes looking for me, it's a completely different story.
Yeah.
Now I have somebody that's going to walk and stand in front of me between me and death, because I know somebody who has beat death already and will help me do the same. And so, although I am afraid, I do know that I have a God who will be there with me all the way.
Amen, Jesse. Let's get you preaching, all right? That's so good. So good. Well, another question is like, if we had an eraser, if we could go back and erase any parts of our life, would you go back and do it, or would you have kept it the way it turned out?
I would keep it the way that it turned out. And because if I didn't have that head injury, I wouldn't be alive right now. I wouldn't do anything different. You know, I'm not able to dance anymore, so that really sucks. But I found a lot of other people and fun things that I can do and stuff like that. So I would say I wouldn't do anything any different.
All right. So an update on where you are health-wise. What happened? We left off at, you had a brain tumor, but and you went through a bunch of things. Is it gone?
Yeah. So basically, I had the tumor. Wasn't cancer. It was right where my speech is. And so they were saying with the surgeries, you know, with these surgeries, when you come out of this, most likely you won't even be able to stock a shelf at the grocery store. Like, you will not be the same. They said you might not even be able to speak. You might have to relearn how to talk, all these different things. And they made me sign the sheet and I'm just like freaking out.
Of course.
And, you know, I was just super, super nervous about it. But so basically when I was really sick, I threw my chemo halfway through and I didn't tell anybody because it was making me so sick that I was like, for me personally, this is not what I am going to do. I cannot do this. And I started looking in other areas because I was just scrambling to try to find anything to save me. And I ended up finding this girl that juices. She juices vegetables and she doesn't eat certain things and all this stuff. And you know, I reached out to her and I couldn't talk to her because she had just moved on from the whole thing, but I actually talked to her mom. And she told me basically everything that this girl did. This girl had stage 4 brain cancer, was given 3 months to live, and is still living to this day. Now lives in Hawaii making bread from scratch, like totally healthy, no tumor whatsoever. And I'm like, okay, what do I got to do? And, you know, I talked to her and then I started looking into this guy called Chris Beat Cancer. And I started collecting all this info and juicing and all this stuff. And after having all that treatment, which was unsuccessful, still had the tumor, I started juicing and doing all of this stuff. And after a few months, it was gone.
Wow.
Just poof.
That is insane. Okay, so tell me the moment that you heard, like, it's gone. Like, what was that like?
I would say it was just, like, shock. I started wondering if it was me or if it was God. I was just in complete shock. You know, it was just, like, the feeling of still being afraid it'd come back. And then at the same time, a huge breath of air for the first time that I've had in a long time to feel like I've won, in a sense.
Jesse, what would you say, like, if you could encourage somebody who is walking through a season right now where it feels very unknown, how would you encourage them since you've already been there yourself?
I would say one of the biggest things I think I've learned from this is there's always going to be something that's happening. Something will always, eventually be something bad that happens or something good that happens, or, you know, you could get sick or you could have so many different things happen. And a lot of things are just out of your control. Mm-hmm. And I think the number one thing, aside from a few others, is I've learned that one of the only things that you can control is how you react. Mm. So for me, whether I'm in pain or I'm not feeling good or, you know, whether I have a bad day, whatever it is, I choose to act with kindness and I choose to try to make other people feel that, which might have been what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I choose to just be kind and be helpful. And because everybody has problems, like, sure, I had a brain tumor and stuff, but there's people that can't get water. There's people that are starving. There's people that die at the age of 4 from brain cancer. I mean, who am I to sit around and be grumpy or be mean to somebody when I should just be grateful to be sitting here? You know, it's like you can't waste that kind of time.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a gift, you know, to have that perspective. One more question too is, did your relationship with your parents change or did it anything differ after going through this together?
Yeah, I would say it definitely brought me and my mom a lot closer. Like, she was there for every little thing, everything she possibly could, like totally battling everything. Like, you know, when I did hear the news, my dad is like not a crier whatsoever. Yeah. And I had heard that, like, after I went in for my 9-hour surgery, that he like went in the bathroom. And like when he came out, you could tell he'd been crying, which is like so unheard of. And like, I think it kind of brought me closer for sure, because like, if all this hadn't have happened, I probably would be in another state or dancing, you know, somewhere doing something, because I'm just like a traveler. I think it definitely brought us closer on a bond that is a very rare, special bond. Just to sum it up quick, like when I was really sick, I came to Westridge Church and I had come maybe 3 times when I was like really sick. I was like 20 pounds less. I probably had my head shaved because the radiation took most of my hair. And I was just like skin and bones, just sitting in the audience by myself and just watching. And I didn't choose to speak to anybody.
Yeah.
I just kind of wanted to keep to myself. And I only saw Westridge just because I was getting country donuts. This is before I was juicing. And so I just like saw that. And I was like, you know, like with this music and stuff, like maybe I should try church. And, you know, so I came in, you know, I sat there and I didn't talk to anybody. And, you know, since I maybe went 3 times and since me getting better, like this is the whole new story of what's been happening. Like I came in a few times again, years later. This was, you know, I was like 24 then, I'm 30 now. Mm-hmm. Came in years later and I came into church and the first couple times I didn't talk to anybody, I did the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And then I started hearing some of the music and I saw a guy up there that's on stage every single time. And I'm like, okay, I bet this guy really likes music. So this new album came out, like Benjamin Hastings, the most amazing album I think there is right now. Like, so cool. And so that like brought me back into church, to be honest, because when it came out and I actually wrote a note to Michael and I said, you know, I don't know who you are, but I see you up on stage. You know, I can tell that you really like music. Here's a couple songs from this album that I really like and I think you'd enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I went to give it to him after the service, but I couldn't find him. So I gave it to someone else to give to him. And then after that, I went out and I started asking about volunteering because I'm like, you know, maybe I'll put myself out there. You know, I always come here and I don't do anything. Like maybe I should volunteer or something. Yeah, I like was like, all right, maybe I'll volunteer. And so I signed up for the next week.
Yeah.
You know, I came in and I was holding the door with my mints and sitting there. And all of a sudden I hear one of those songs that I put on the paper for Michael.
Yeah.
And I was like, they learned this song in a week and they're playing it for me. Like, oh my gosh, like I cannot even, wow, that's so nice. And like, I sat through the service. I was like raising my hand in the audience. Like, praise God. Like I was like so excited and I ended up getting to talk to Michael after. And he's like, I just want you to know that those songs are planned 8 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
And one of those songs that I recommended was played the very next service when I decided to give a little bit. And I felt like because I gave a little bit, God gave a little back, you know, and it's like, if you're not knocking in the right ways, that door might not open. What was I doing for God? Or what was I doing to get to know God more? You know, other than trying to prove his existence, I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so hearing that it had been planned for 8 weeks, a song that I had said that it was a very new song.
Yeah.
And so that just really blew my mind. So I was so moved that I went out and I'm like, I will volunteer however you need. And they're like, well, we really like to put you on the actual team. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, of course. Like I would totally love to. And like, since then, just insane things have been happening. Like I did an interview with you for the church like 5 minutes before, and this was weeks later, 5 minutes before we actually did our interview, that song started playing again.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, like, because I was nervous about doing it. And it's almost like God was like, I'm still here. Like,
yeah,
do it.
Yeah.
And like on the same day before that interview, like I said, I had never learned my life expectancy because I thought it would just influence my brain or just crush me. And this is years later, obviously. And recently I was talking to my mom about the last interview, you know, that we were doing for church, and we were talking back and forth, and she totally did not mean to. She would never. It was a total accident.
Yeah.
But she was like, yeah, don't forget to let them know that the doctor said you had 3 to 5 years to live.
Wow.
And I heard that and I was just like, what? Like, and she's like, oh my God, I totally forgot. I'm so sorry. I had no idea. And like, that really rocked me that day. And so like, I was shaking visibly. I talked to Scott. It just, it floored me. Cause like, it's so many years later and I'm totally fine. Like,
yeah.
And so like, I was talking to Scott beforehand. I wasn't sure if I was going to do it. And then in that service, that same song that I had given him played again on that day. And it's just like, that was God saying, no, 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 go ahead. Like, you're in the right place. Like, tell people, tell everyone what happened.
Absolutely.
And it's just crazy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, like, that's why I think stories matter. And I think sometimes we either think like, is it worth sharing? You know, is it good enough? Is it, you know, we just get in our head or we're nervous enough. You know, when we meet other people in our life, we're like, I don't know, like, do they have the time? Like, is this valuable to share? And it is, because we don't realize the connections that are going to be made. Or maybe it's the words that we say that we think are completely mundane, that it impacts their life in such a way, just like that song did for you. And so we just don't know. And I think that's like why stories matter so much. Like, our parable stories are so important moving forward. So Jesse, thank you so much for sharing your heart. Is there anything else you wanted to share today?
Yeah, so I think I chose, and it's from the Bible. It's Matthew 11:6. I think I said that right. It's blessed are you who does not lose their faith on account of me. And that really sits with me because John, huge believer, obviously, like one of the biggest believers, like Jesus is coming before me and all these things. And when it came down to it, and he was sitting in a prison cell waiting to die, kind of like I felt I was, you start to question things. You start to think, are you really who you said you are? And John, you know, he started asking questions, and he sent a couple people to go ask Jesus, are you really who you said you are? And Jesus just started healing people. And it's like, for me, some people get healed and some people get that, but sometimes they don't. And like, with what that taught me is like, some people, for Jesus, like, Jesus can produce faith, but I never really thought that Jesus could reduce faith. Because like you were saying before, like, the second you start making Jesus like I was, like your genie, like, oh, you're rubbing the lamp. Like, all right, like, okay, Jesus, just show up like this, you know, just flicker that light, just do that little thing, is like the second that he could reduce faith, because God's not a genie. He's God. So even John was sitting in there doubting, questioning, and not everybody really gets that. So I think God has taught me a lot of it is just perseverance and how you react to things. And you just have to trust in God that he is who he said he is. I think that, you know, 12 disciples, if you really think about it, okay, what's a good way I can believe? If you were to think back 2000 years ago, whatever, there was 12 people that changed the entire world, 12 disciples that completely changed the entire world and died in the gruesome ways that they did, truly believing that he was the Messiah. I'm not going to be beheaded or die in these gruesome ways for something that I don't believe.
Yeah.
And all these people, 12 people, changed the entire world to this day. How in the world could that not be the truth?
Yeah. Well, Jesse, thank you for taking us on this journey of just like having this moment of seeking truth and to find out if Jesus is real for you. And I'm glad that he is. And I'm excited to see what is coming for you down the road as you continue, you know, with your wife and this new baby girl. And it's very exciting. If people want to connect with you in any way, how can they do that?
Yeah, you could definitely do social media, Instagram. I'm definitely on Instagram. I don't have Facebook, but Instagram for sure.
We'll take it. Instagram's great. All right. Well, Jesse, thank you so much for being on the Parable Podcast.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Jesse for sharing his story. To connect with him, simply visit DanielleZabchank.com for details. And here are two reflection questions from our time with Jesse. Number one, maybe you are just like Jesse and you are walking in a season of the unknown right now. I would encourage you to spend some time in prayer so that you can be more attuned to his, God's direction, but also still in the unknown. It could be for preparation. Maybe God is asking you or trying to help you adjust your own heart. Seek God's heart first, because that is the first sign of direction. Number two, pay attention to the lyrics of worship songs this week. Whether you are listening on Spotify or YouTube, wherever you listen to worship songs, or maybe it's on Sunday service, it's really easy to just read them, but not fully feel and know who we are worshiping. So I would encourage you to really spend some time and really invest in that time of worship. One easy way you can support the Parable Podcast is simply by sharing it with a friend. If you could pass this episode along today, that really helps people find out about these amazing Parable stories. And thank you to my technical producer of a husband for his mad editing skills. That'll do it for today. I'm grateful that you took the time to spend it with me. Remember, your parable showcases how he is even with you in the unknown. See you back again next week on the Parable Podcast.